This is Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Cashing Out right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Greg Oops Peterson holding it down for the next 3 hours. We have to take a look back at what we all saw in the NBA draft. Just wrapped up a few minutes ago. Had some surprises in the second round. I can't say that I thought that Tavon Peter was going to be getting drafted, so we're going to have some thoughts there. We've got ourselves a really nice slate of Major League Baseball that is going to be coming up on this Friday, so we're going to be breaking down all those games. And Greg's random football roulette continues tonight, as I've got 16 straight nights, so we're doing two teams a night. We've got two more that we're going to be spitting out in the randomizer. We're going to get you guys some thoughts, hopefully some futures winners, and so much more. And we're going to be joined in 15 minutes by a man that's out there in the great state of Pennsylvania, Eitan Chander. He does a tremendous job over at Odd Shopper. He's going to be joining me. We're going to be recapping the NBA draft with him. We'll see if he's got anything on the baseball card as well. So we've got a lot of fun that is going to be coming up on that front. We certainly have to be diving in a little bit with regards to some of these teams that I'm feeling bullish/bearish on in Major League Baseball as well. But how about if we do recap what we saw in the NBA draft? As second round, it was on, and there were a few picks I really liked. There were some guys that slid a little bit further than I thought, like Maximin Reynaud, I thought might have been the best pick of the second round. The Sacramento Kings were able to pick him up at pick number 41. 7'1" big man, comes out of Stanford, really able to pop it from three. Now, I will say this before I go any further. Lots of these second round picks are not necessarily going to be guys that are panning out. Like, if you're banking on your organization having some sort of a Nikola Jokic 2.0, yeah, I would say temper your expectations just a little bit. But there are gems to be found in the second round. Like, I'm a Milwaukee Bucks fan. Michael Redd was a guy that was a second round pick. You were able to have a few years ago Chris Middleton be a second round draft pick. So, I mean, there are gems to be had. And even that first pick of the second round, Rashear Fleming, most people thought that he was going to be a first round guy. Nice solid player out of St. Joe's, 6'9", is able to pop it and lock it from three, has some good versatility, and I think that his game translates very well to the NBA, so I thought that that was solid. And then I need to talk about a team that I just feel really good about with regards to their draft, and I was on with Matt Eumanns along with Will Hill on VSiN Primetime a little bit earlier, and this was one of my winners that I did give out for the NBA draft. How about the Charlotte Hornets and the fact that they got a win over the last 2 days? We have not been able to say that about the Charlotte Hornets too much. You can conk it up all at four. A little bit of a foregone conclusion, but you know what? Still a guy that's going to be able to come in. He's going to be able to give you some very nice instant offense, and I feel pretty good about that one. You get Liam McNeely, who they traded away Mark Williams to be able to get that 29th overall pick, and they've got a 2029 first-round pick in their pocket, and for the Phoenix Suns, that 2029 first-round pick, that might not be that low of a pick, to say the least. They might be getting a very, very good pick there. And additionally, you pick up here on this day Ryan Kalkbrenner along with Sion James. So, I mean, you lose Mark Williams, but you pick up Kalkbrenner. Kalkbrenner, a guy that throughout his college basketball career was pretty stable at being able to be healthy. Nice shot blocker, has been able to branch out, be able to pop a few threes. And is he Mark Williams right now? No, but he's a guy that stayed around in college basketball for quite a while. I think that he's going to be able to come in right away and hold down the fort. So I thought that that was very solid. Like, I still go back to what I saw yesterday. They really didn't have any massive picks today, but the Heat with Kasperis Jakusonis at number 20, I thought that that was a really good pick. Like, the Miami Heat, they just pick guys that they know are going to be able to fit their organization. You know that they're going to be able to come in right away, and they're going to be able to do a very rock solid job, and I felt like that was one of those picks that was solid. And for the Utah Jazz, this was a solid draft for them as well, because you get a guy in Ace Bailey at number 5, who I know that he expressed some, shall we say, concern about perhaps going number 5. He was trying to dictate the terms as to where he was going to go. The Utah Jazz decided to call their bluff, but I mean, that's a top 3 talent that you're going to get number 5 overall, albeit I felt like consistency was something they needed to work upon at Rutgers. But just the athletic ability, the size, the way that he's able to space things out on the floor. I really like him. And then Walter Clayton at number 18. I thought that that was absolutely massive. In my opinion, one of the best spot-up shooters that you were able to find in all of basketball this past season. Him going on over there, I thought that that was very big. So, I mean, those were some of the winners. And then if you're taking a look at some of the teams more from round number 2, that they were able to find some nice guys in general, like, I feel like the Toronto Raptors put together a solid draft. I know that not a lot of people are necessarily overly bullish on Colin Murray-Boyles. A lot of people thought that he should have probably went more in like that 12 range, but I like his overall versatility. I think that he right away is going to be able to give this team a little bit of everything. You can play him at multiple positions. He gives you some scoring. He gives you some rebounding, blocks, steals. He just is able to stuff the stat sheet. And then here in the early part of the second round, you pick up Elijah Martin. Martin was very solid over at Florida this last season, a national champion. I know that a lot of people thought that he was a little bit of a reach, but I mean, still you're able to get a guy that I think is going to be able to do a nice job of being able to give you a little bit of facilitation, do a nice job giving you some solid shooting. So I thought that that was big for a Raptors team that I think that they could be on a little bit of a come up for this upcoming season in the Eastern Conference, that in general I feel like it's wide open. And speaking of a wide open conference in general in terms of the East, I think that that is something that you have to take a look at a little bit more as well, with some of these guys that they are going to be able to come in and they're going to be able to give you some good production. As this is Cashing Out right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. And I do believe that Martin, by the way, was traded to Sacramento as well, so I mean that adds to the Kings Hall with regards to Maxime Radon, him going on over there. And I will say there were multiple trades for pretty much every single one of these second round draft picks, so it made things very hard to be able to tag along with. But there were some surprises as well. Like, I know that I was on with our good friend and Matt Eumanns when this was happening. Yeah, Jemai Meshek be the number 59 overall pick. I'm not quite sure where that came from. Like, I feel like he was a solid player in college. Like, he was a very solid defender, but not quite sure why they drafted him, but they did draft him. So, a congratulations there. The one towards back half of the second round that I just take a look at, and you know what? You feel a little bit of upside and you feel really good about Tyrese Proctor. And he's going to be coming on over to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Like, that's a guy that I think could be able to come in off the bench, give you a little bit of facilitation, was obviously in that Duke program. So, that was one where I took a look at things and felt very good about that. So, I mean, good on being able to get Tyrese Proctor late in the second round, and good on being able to wager on some ponies this year as well, because as we know, we are now in the dog days of summer, and with the dog days of summer, the betting options, they're a little bit more limited. But I mean, if you're looking to be able to get in on some action, First Bet, they let you bet on hundreds of horse races every single day from the trap tracks all across the United States and around the world. Sign up over at firstbet.com. That is the number one, stbet.com, and utilize that promo code of VSIN200, VSIN200. That'll claim you a 20% rebate for your first 60 days, and that's up to $200 on that. Head on over to firstbet.com for that. As it is Cashing Out with myself, Greg Oops Peterson, right here on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. So there were a few clear winners with regards to the draft. I'll tell you right now, here's a clear loser I had. I just still don't get the Young Henson pick from Memphis at number 16. Like, that was one where I was just like, what are we doing here? Like, I get that there's some upside. He's north of 7 feet tall, and I know that Zach Edey towards back half of the season last year got a little bit banged up, but I mean, that was one that had me scratch my head a little bit. And then you had the Pelicans. They draft Jeremiah Fears, who, I mean, he climbed up the NBA draft board. A lot of people felt like he might not have been there at 7. I have my concerns with him. Like, I know that there's a lot of people that love the athletic ability, and I do as well. He wasn't necessarily a consistent three-point shooter. He's a guy that turned the ball over a lot over at Oklahoma as well, and just felt like at times he was trying to do a little bit too much. And then trading away the unprotected first round pick for Derrick Queen. And I like Derrick Queen. Like, I think that Derrick Queen is a very rock solid player. I think that he's actually going to make a solid impact for the New Orleans Pelicans. I don't hate the player that was picked itself. I hate the fact that you give up an unprotected first round draft pick in 2026 to be able to get him, though, because let's call it what it is. Do we really think that the New Orleans Pelicans are going to be lighting the world ablaze and they're going to be able to rise up in the Western Conference? Yeah, I don't think so. And they made a little bit of a trade with being able to get the pool party a little bit earlier in the weekend. We do love ourselves a good pool party. And then, I mean, with regards to just everything in general with the Portland Trailblazers trading out of pick number 11 as well. And I was mentioning Young Henson. They were actually trading with the Memphis Grizzlies to be able to get that pick as well. So, not sure what the Trailblazers have been doing this offseason, because on top of that, they also get Jrue Holiday. And with Jrue Holiday, if you're a piece away, he's absolutely tremendous. He's a very good, high-character guy. He's going to be in your locker room, and he's going to be able to give you just some energy, some zest. He's going to be able to get the most out of the young guys. Are the Portland Trailblazers really in a position where Jrue Holiday is going to be that guy that really elevates them? I don't think so. So that was one that I thought was a little bit curious in general. So we had a few losers there. And then if you're looking at some of those later picks that we saw in the back half of the second round, again, there were just some surprises. I mentioned it with Mayshak. I'm still really surprised that Talon Peter out of Liberty got picked. Now, Talon Peter is a guy that I know very well. Like, Liberty was one of the best three-point shooting teams in all of college basketball. I thought that they were going to win two games in the NCAA tournament, and they won none. But, I mean, Talon Peter, he was a sixth man at Liberty that shot 45% from three. Like, a really good three-point shooter. He wasn't even a starter for the Liberty Flames, and here he is getting drafted in the second round by the Indiana Pacers. Like, you had Ryan Nemhart on the board, you had a few other guys like a Will Richard that you could have easily grabbed. I'm not sure what was happening there, so I thought that that was really interesting to say the least. Brooks Barnheiser getting drafted by the Oklahoma City Thunder, I thought was a choice. Like, I don't know if I would have went with Brooks Barnheiser, but, I mean, the OKC Thunder, they know what the heck they're doing, so I will just default to them on that one. Now, the one that I really like, the fact that you had Kobe Bryant, and he was originally picked by the Golden State Warriors, him going on over and getting traded to the Phoenix Suns. Like, that's actually a good move by the Phoenix Suns. They finally got one of those right, so I do like what they were able to do there. So we had some interesting picks in the second round of the NBA draft, and we'll talk a little bit more NBA on the flip side, and we'll see if we've got some baseball picks as well as we head out to the great state of Pennsylvania next. Eitan Chander, he does a tremendous job over at Odd Shopper. He's going to be joining me on the flip side right here on Cashing Out on Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to Cashing Out here on Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
We're back here on Cashing Out on Visa, the Sports Betting Network, and it is always great to be joined by this man on the Progressive Guest Line as we've got Eitan Chander aboard. He does an absolutely tremendous job over at Odd Shopper, taking a look at a little bit of everything, basketball, football, baseball, you name it, he does it. He's out there in the great state of Pennsylvania, and Eitan, it's great to get you aboard. Thank you.
My pleasure, Greg. Anything for you, my brother. Great to see you, and excited to talk, as always, a bunch of different things.
Absolutely. And first things first, one of the big events that we saw on Thursday was the NBA draft. Round number two, not quite as rambunctious as number one, though we did see some surprises, to say the least. And just what did you make out of the NBA draft and the way that things really developed for some of these teams?
So I think overall, you look at round one, and clearly this is a draft that's stacked with talent. I don't know how earth-shattering it's going to be year one for a team. You can look at maybe the Thunder and some other squads kind of deeper into the first round as far as depth is concerned. But I can tell you here in Philadelphia, VJ Edgecombe is not making the difference. It's not putting now this selection over the top for a Sixers team that struggled to decide when to shut people down last year. Like, that was the big decision for the Sixers, was when to shut people down. So the big story was Ace Bailey. And I actually think, Greg, this is a genius move by Danny Ainge, one that is probably under-discussed, and I don't know why, because Danny Ainge has the pedigree, clearly, and you see what he's done anywhere he's stepped into a building. But Ace Bailey is not stuck. Ace Bailey is not, you know, in a situation where he's not going to show up. Ace Bailey has to get paid if he wants to get out of Utah and show that he wants to get out of Utah. He's motivated now. Or maybe he settles in an area where it's totally convenient, but it was the option. So I think the Sixers taking someone like VJ Edgecombe and not putting Ace Bailey in that situation to then see if they could trade, they could move on. It's not a surprise, but I think it was more of a safe pick.
Yep, and with Vijay Edgecombe, I thought that he was going to be going number three overall. I do like his overall game, and for the 76ers, just what's the outlook of this team after it was oh so disappointing last year? As we know, Joel Embiid and company, there were a whole bunch of injuries. Tyrese Maxey looks to be coming into his own as a guard, but I mean, for the 76ers, couldn't have been much more disappointing last year, and I don't think that there's anywhere to go but up from here.
You would think, right? And my favorite saying now in the NBA is, well, the East is wide open. And it should be to an extent because you have a couple of key players who are going to be out next year. But what I don't understand is how do the Philadelphia 76ers automatically benefit? You want to talk about the Knicks or some squad, right, that could jump in there and take advantage. Tatum, Halley, guys are out. Okay, but that's predicated on people staying healthy, on the teams taking advantage of it. The entire whole thought process that Joel Embiid is going to be healthy and active deep into the playoffs, and that Paul George is going to reinvent himself and actually care about basketball and not his podcast, and that Tyrese Maxey is actually going to be able to gel with these guys is laughable, Greg. They are no closer to getting out of the second round with Vijay Edgecombe, Ace Bailey, Greg Peterson. It didn't matter who they took last night. But the reality is the Sixers cannot continue to expect success built on a faulty structure, and that's Joel Embiid. Here's the thing. If Daryl Morey, and this is why I do think Vijay Edgecombe is an indication that Joel Embiid and Paul Pierce are not long here, right, for the 76ers, and that's playoff P, and that's Joel, because Daryl Morey is going to rebuild ASAP. And that rebuild is going to take a shorter pathway if you have Jared McCain, Vijay Edgecombe, and of course, Tyrese Maxey.
Yep, and with the 76ers, they're out there to be able to win the East currently at 10-1, and I'm right there with you just think that there's too many teams out there that provide a little bit more bang for your buck. Like, I do think that the Cleveland Cavaliers are the rightful short shot here at a plus 260, and they should be a very, very slim short shot, but I'm right there with you. I do think that the East is wide open, and is there a team or two that you do take a look at, and you think that they could be able to pop, and they could be a little bit of a surprise?
Yeah, I think everybody's rightfully so placing a team like Indy and Boston in a situation where it's like, okay, you're down a key player. What do you do around that? And Orlando and New York, the odds are too tight right now and a reflection of that movement. I totally agree with you. Cleveland is the play right now. It's unfortunate they're at the top. You cannot take them. But if you're looking for a team that's going to move and a team that should in the standings reflect taking advantage of a weaker and maybe just wide open East, how is it not Detroit at 16-1? Atlanta, maybe, right? Like, you could look at another squad like Miami or Chicago as far as moving up, and maybe there's some value, but there's not going to be hedgeable value by any means. Detroit's making the playoffs. Detroit now at a 16-1 ticket is somewhat flexible, is somewhat playable if they're not just scraping or struggling to get into the play-in game, which I don't think they will, right? Increased gelling. You clearly have some individual talent on there. This team has gotten better as well. So I think Detroit is truly intriguing at 16-1. I don't know, man. I don't think that I could lay a ticket at like $150-1 on the Nets, despite them taking, I think, 15 people in the first round on Thursday night, Greg. It would be tough to justify that these teams all of a sudden are going to jettison to the top and we're going to see them at plus 550 or maybe even shorter when you're looking at this, you know, 3 months into the season.
Yep, I'm right there with you. As Eitan Shander does such great work over at Odd Chopper, joining me on Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, and one more in the East. Right now, that number two team, the Knicks, at plus 290. I know that you were talking about the 76ers having no value. I think that might be the worst value on the board because with the Knicks, ooh, I just don't necessarily like the bench of this team. I know they've got a lot of chemistry with the Villanova guys, but we still don't know the coaching situation for them, and I just think it's a very strange ordeal right now that the Knicks are in.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, and that there's this expectation that just because you guys play together and just because that there is some cohesion and continuity year to year, that you're automatically given something. And I think the odds reflect that people are basically expecting and placing the Knicks in this spot up there in the top. It doesn't mean that minus a couple of key players, like, for example, Indiana. Now, I'm not going to put a ticket on them at 22-1, Greg, but Tyrese Halliburton's absence does not make this team a bottom feeder. It does not make this Indiana Pacers team a squad, a doormat that you could just step on every time you take them on, and no matter where you that game is played, pardon me. The Pacers are still going to be a tough out. And I think that's what's going to make things difficult for the Knicks, is that they're not just going to steamroll squads. And yeah, granted, coaching up in the air and clearly not going to be run into the ground as we've seen with Tibbs, but I don't know what that looks like either. And we saw success to an extent, right, with Tibbs, to where grinding these guys and ensuring that you don't lose as many of maybe of these regular season games and you do secure seeding, maybe that's not the case if you extend this out and your rotation extends a little bit more and guys are playing less in 20-point blowouts. But the problem is in the playoffs, now things get a little tighter and you can't afford, if you're banking on the Knicks at plus 290, you can't afford anybody to get hurt. Meanwhile, you look at some other teams and you're already expecting to be on the outside trying to get up. The Knicks, there's nowhere to go but down.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I'm with the New York Knicks, just an intriguing team in general, and I feel like there's just a lot more value with a team like the Magic, who I like the fact that they picked up Desmond Bain, really being able to shore up one of those holes that they had from a season ago. And you mentioned it with the Detroit Pistons, a team that you know is going to be able to make the playoffs. Lots of young talent out there as well, and there's a lot of talent that's going to be taking the diamond on Friday as well. Eitan, is there anything that you're taking a look at in terms of the Friday baseball card that is really standing out to you?
Yeah, there are a couple. You know, at some point, the Phillies are going to have to score some runs, you would think, right? To be looking at, I know that they move on from Houston. Is that not amazing? Just seeing this stretch in which they finally score a run, thank goodness. But Houston and that pitching duel that we saw for three straight games, I do like them in some capacity. If you wanted to run their team total against the Braves, that's fine. If you just wanted to run them on the money line, I'm totally okay with that. I am intrigued in Tampa. You know, this is a rematch, not only as far as what we saw a week ago, Greg, but also exact same as far as on the pitching side with the Rays. The Rays are super hot right now. I'd even be tempted a rare run line. I'm really intrigued, but it's so obvious, right? Not that this would ever keep me from a bet, but, you know, you're getting plus 133 for one of the hottest teams across baseball on the run line against a squad in Baltimore who is just absolutely flat right now, especially when it comes to staying in games. That half run not making a difference for me. So I think the Rays on the money line, or the run line, pardon me, and the Phillies, either if you wanted to look at and attack their money line or simply their team total, those would be two areas for me that I've already attacked. Seattle's intriguing as well. I know that on the road that they've struggled a little bit there, especially in their recent series, but taking on the Rangers. But those would be the top two for me, man.
Yep, and with the Texas Rangers, just a team that's not been able to score all season long, but a man that is scoring points on this show, that'd be you, Eitan. You do such a tremendous job over at Odd Shopper, and really do appreciate it. Thank you so much.
I miss those transitions, brother. Thank you, Greg.
Always great to be able to get Eitan aboard. He does such a great job out there in the great state of Pennsylvania, taking a look at basketball, baseball, and so much more. And we do have a locked and loaded slate in Major League Baseball on Friday. So how about if we start breaking that down on the flip side right here on Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to Cashing Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're back here on Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Greg Oops Peterson holding it down tonight. Big thanks to Eitan Chander, does such great work over at Odd Shopper, for joining me in the last segment, tying a bow around what we saw in the NBA draft and how to decipher an Eastern Conference that is now oh so interesting, because you have the Tyrese Halliburton injury, you've got the Bucks without Damian Lillard, you've got Jason Tatum down for the Boston Celtics, the Orlando Magic making some moves, so just a lot of fun there. Big thanks to Eitan for joining me in the last segment. Now, how about if we take a look at some baseball that we've got on this wonderful Friday? All 30 teams in action. Do have to say this as well. The day ends in Y and we don't have a day game. What are we doing here, Major League Baseball, especially on a Friday? Why couldn't we have some sort of four-game set, get ourselves a day game, feel good about going into the weekend? It's Friday, so Yeah, not necessarily bullish on Major League Baseball for doing that, but I am feeling bullish about the card in general, and we got our write-ups up on VSiN.com. We look to be able to venture through because we got a 7-1 yesterday. We're going to look to do even better today, though that's always very difficult to do, but you know what? You always set the standard high. This is not a game that made the write-ups, but I do like this total under. This is 901, 902 at the top of the card, as Eitan is out there in the great state of Pennsylvania, so we go to the great state of Pennsylvania for our Pirates and Mets. David Peterson, great name. He's going to be going for the Mets, and Mitch Keller is on the bump for Pittsburgh. And Pittsburgh, right now, an underdog of between plus 138 to a plus 145. That neighborhood about minus 157, minus 169. That's your number on the Metropolitans. Total game is 8.5, and now you're starting to get like minus 105 juice on the under. If you're looking at that run line, right around about even money on the New York Mets, and this is a circumstance where I'm going to be waiting a little bit on the money line slash run line. If we can get up to like a plus 150, I'd be taking a look at the Pirates. If we can get down below a minus 150, that'll be my buy point on the Mets. I highly doubt that we're getting below a minus 150, so it's most likely going to be the Buccos. And for Mitch Keller, he's always been a little bit better at home rather than on the road. He's got an ERA that's a little bit north of 5 when he's on the road, giving up about 1.2 or so home runs per 9 innings, 0.8 home runs per 9 innings when he is at home. At home, that ERA falls by a full point, and a big reason why I do like this total under. The Pittsburgh Pirates, out of 30 teams thus far this season, are 30th in terms of runs per game. It has been less than savory, though. Yeah, Kansas City Royals are giving some big giant chase right now with the way that they just threw up there a complete and utter turd nugget against the Tampa Bay Rays this week. One total run in 3 games, so they certainly do have company, but I mean, for the Pittsburgh Pirates, you're just not getting any offense out of any of these guys. Like, Oneil Cruz, along with Tommy Pham, Alexander Canario, Jared Trollo. You go down the list of guys hitting a 220 or lower, and I mean, Cruz has been able to give you a double-figure amount of homers, and there are 3 guys on the roster. This is going to be a game played on June 27th. 3 guys on the roster with north of 4 home runs this year. Brian Reynolds, Andrew McCutchen being the other two. You just need to be getting a bit more out of these guys. And for the New York Mets, you know that you've got some firepower with this lineup, a quartet of different guys with at least 15 home runs. Now, they did have to use up quite a bit of the bullpen with Griffin Canning going down with an injury on Thursday. Looks like it was a bit of an Achilles injury. I am not quite sure what the specifics are of it. We might not know until tomorrow, but yeah, I would expect him to be hitting the injured list, to say the least. But I mean, that said, Francisco Lindor, 15 plus homers, he's doing a good job moving line. Juan Soto, Pete Alonso, these guys are able to supply boom. And for the New York Mets, the good news is they were able to have some of these longer guys come in and hold down the fort, so you should still have a lot of your allotment of guys that you typically rely upon. Reed Garrett, Ryan Stanek, Oscar Brazoben, these guys have been able to give you a sub-3 ERA in there and able to hold down the fort. And for the Pittsburgh Pirates, all of a sudden, this has been a little bit better bullpen for them, as well as you've got quite a few guys who are giving you a sub-325 ERA. David Bednar, after a really rough start to the season, he's been able to rise up. He's been able to do some nice things for this team. And additionally, you've been able to get some of these guys like a Chase Shoger, Caleb Ferguson, Danny Santana, the former guys for the LA Dodgers, coming in there, holding down the fort. I do think that this is going to be a relatively well-pitched game, especially with Peterson. Not necessarily giving you a lot of swing and miss, 7.7 strikeouts per 9 innings, but he's posting up a sub-325 ERA, has been able to do a pretty rock-solid job on the road, keeps the ball in the yard, giving up less than home run per 9 innings, and the Pittsburgh Pirates do a great job by themselves of keeping the ball in the yard. So this is a total where with the 8.5, I'm looking at the under. When it's all said and done, if I can get a plus 150 or higher, and I think that we should be able to get there, going to be looking at the Pittsburgh Pirates on the money line as well. What else we're taking a look at is a great podcast here at VSiN, the VSiN Daily Morning Bets Podcast. It is your first look at the day's action, taking a look at the betting lines, sharp action, and market movement, all in just 15 minutes. So that way you're able to stay ahead of all the action, and you know where to make the smart wagers and stay out of all these line moves all before your morning coffee is done. Hosted by the VSiN team of experts and the Daily Morning Lines podcast, it is indeed fast, focused, and built for bettors just like you. Listen to the VSiN Daily Morning Bets podcast wherever your podcast, or get it on the VSiN Watch app. It is the sharpest way to start your betting day. It is the VSiN Daily Morning Bets podcast, as it is cashing out with myself, Greg Oops Peterson, right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. And certainly, we have a lot to decipher with regards to the games on Friday. Now, if you take a look at what we got on Thursday, We only had one evening game, which I thought was very intriguing. We had no games out there on the West Coast. So, I mean, if you're out there on the East Coast, all the action was done by 10:15 p.m. Eastern. So kids aren't having to stay up late to watch any of these games or anything like that. But I mean, you did see some intriguing blankings that happened in Major League Baseball. As a matter of fact, I believe that half the games that you saw on the card involved a shutout. The Detroit Tigers got the job done over the Athletics by a count of 8-0. The Guardians got blanked by the Toronto Blue Jays 6-0. You had a 4-0 game between the Rays and the Royals. And again, I think that this is a team that's worth pounding on a little bit more. The Kansas City Royals just cannot hit at home. Like, I have no idea what's happened with this team. Because you recall last year, there were a lot of people that thought, oh, the Kansas City Royals, they're cheating at home. They've got these big, giant home and road splits. Well, they do have some pretty big home and road splits this year. How about them being able to average away from home right in the neighborhood about 3.8 runs per game, which it doesn't sound impressive, but you know what? It's 3.8 runs per game at home. Fewer than 2.8 runs per game. They're averaging more than a full run less at home rather than on the road. And for those that are out there in Kansas City, it's not cold temperatures right now. This is not like we've got some sort of a squall that's happening in Kansas City or anything like that. We had some warm temperatures. The wind was blowing out a little bit, and they still couldn't score. Like, this team, in terms of home runs on a per at-bat basis, it's non-existent. And I mean, for a normal player, Bobby Witt Jr. is having a relatively solid year. His WAR is still relatively high, what have you. But I mean, the fact that he's only getting 10 home runs for this team is a little bit of a concern. And here's a number that you want to note. 0.9. Why do you want to note 0.9? That's the percentage of at-bats that yield a home run for the Kansas City Royals. At home, specifically. Less than one in every 100 at-bats that they have at home is right now generating a home run. Just absolutely deplorable what we've seen out of them. So that's not great, to say the least. You did see a few other blankings as well, and I was talking about this with Matt Eumanns along with Will Hill on the previous show, VSiN Prime Time. They do a great job there. Typically, I'd like to fade these guys coming off of the injured list. There are quite a few times where I just think that they're going to have a little bit of a tough time acclimating. I did not do that with Shota Imanaga, though, and I am glad that I did not. He was able to go out there, lent a good start against the St. Louis Cardinals, 3-0, and that is going to be massive for a Cubs team then. They've been one of the better road teams in all baseball this year. Now 23-18 on the road. Shota Imanaga didn't necessarily go overly deep in the game. Five innings, he was able to put up five innings of shutout baseball. He had 77 pitches, so was able to find his bearings, and he looked really good at the AAA level as well. And that's always something that you want to note. When these guys are coming up from the minor league level, slash when they're coming off the injury list, in the case of Imanaga, and you've got a few minor league rehab starts, how they did in those starts, I think, is absolutely paramount. And Imanaga was rocking and rolling. He had 16 strikeouts in 10 and two-thirds innings, and he had not allowed a single run. He doesn't allow a single run in this start. You're able to get the under, and you're able to get the job done with the Chicago Cubs, so that one made me very happy. And then again, I was referring to that New York Mets game a few minutes ago that we're going to be seeing coming up on Friday, but the fact that they were able to do a good job of holding down the fort with their bullpen after the Griffin Canning injury, that does stand out to me. 4-0 the final, and I think that this needs to be just really brought up a little bit more than what it is. We all know that the Atlanta Braves are struggling this year. They're currently 6 games below .500. They're way out of a playoff spot. And even if they get hot towards the second half of the season, they probably have dug themselves, in my opinion, a little bit too deep of a hole for them to be able to come back. 15-28 on the road. Like, I recognize that there are some teams that they play a little bit differently on the road rather than at home, but 15-28 is just absolutely ridiculous for the New York Metropolitans. By the way, 29-12 at home, so they have been very good out there in Queens. And for this New York Mets team, just all coming down to the bullpen right now. Like, even their, shall we say, less than A plus guys, like they had Austin Warren along Dom Nunez be able to fill 4 1/3 innings after Griffin Canning went down with the injury. From there, you pass it off to Ryan Stanek, Edwin Diaz, who threw a combined 25 pitches between the two of them. That's a way to be able to keep your bullpen up and running. You have everything going in the right direction there. So for the New York Mets, very rock solid win for them. Now, we don't know who the Atlanta Braves are going to be pitching on Friday yet, so that's a little bit rough, but we do know who's going to be going out there for the Oakland Athletics and the New York Yankees. We'll break that game down on the flip side right here on Cashing Out on Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're back here on Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Greg Oops Peterson holding it down tonight. We are holding it down with a great slate of baseball that's going to be coming up for this Friday. And additionally, we do have to get you set for the football season. Greg Peterson's Random Football Roulette is going to be coming your way in next hour. We're going to be taking a look at all 32 teams here over the next 16 nights. We started off this series yesterday with the Jacksonville Jaguars and the LA Rams, and what happens is it sounds exactly what it is. We pretty much hit what I go to in terms of random.org. We hit the randomizer, and it spits out a team, and after it spits out a team, that's a team that I break down, and we're going to do all 32 teams here over the next 16 nights. This is night number 2 of the extravaganza, so we've got ourselves a lot of fun there, and we do have ourselves a lot of fun in terms of baseball slate that we're going to be seeing on this Friday as well. I know that our good buddy Will Hill is going to be at the New York Yankees game, and how about if we try to find him a win here? 9-13, 9-14 on the card. It is the Athletics on the road against the Yankees. Will Warren is on the bump for the Yanks, and Mitch Spence goes for the Athletics, and Athletics are sizable underdogs. Going to be finding them anywhere between plus 180 to about a plus 175. That neighborhood of minus $2, seeing as high as minus 215. That number on the Yankees. If you're looking at that run line price, a relatively respectable one. Right in that neighborhood about minus 102 to a minus 105. And total on this game, you're finding it at an 8.5, shaded up a little bit to the over. And I do like this total over. I set my total a little bit north of 9. For Mitch Spence, he's actually been pretty solid for the Athletics. He's right now giving you about a 3.80 ERA. Not going to, like, wow you with his strikeout numbers or anything like that. Right in the neighborhood, about 7.7 strikeouts per 9 innings. A little bit less than 3 walks per 9. And his home runs per 9 rate is sub 1. So he's been able to do a solid job there. And for Will Warren, he's not giving up a lot of homers. Will Warren gives up about 0.8 home runs per 9 innings. He's honestly got a really good fielding independent. It's a 2.84, but rocking a 4.66 ERA. A lot of that is due to the command. In terms of command, he is giving up north of 3.6 walks per 9 innings, and I've just noticed he's giving up a lot of what I call general contact. Like, when he misses his spot, he misses it relatively badly. Not enough to give up a homer, but enough to be able to move the line, get guys on base. And for the New York Yankees, this is a bullpen that is now mixing and matching a little bit better. They had Luke Weaver on the injured list, so they had to figure out a few things while he needed to come back, and now he is back in the fold. You've got the likes of a Fernando Cruz throwing there as well. Yuri De Los Santos, who's been a nice find for them. Jonathan Loaisiga, these guys giving you a sub 3.5 ERA, and I do think that for a Yankees team that's been brutal for this offense recently, 4 runs or fewer in all but 3 out of their last 14 games, I think that this is a come up for them. And the big reason why this is a come up is I just mentioned the Yankees bullpen, pretty solid. They're a top 10 team in terms of bullpen ERA. The Athletics, out of 30 teams, are 30th. It is not good, to say the least, as Mason Miller, even, who is a really good closer, by the way, I just don't know what's happened with him this season. He's posting up nearly a 5 ERA. You've got one guy in this bullpen for the A's that has seen at least 8 appearances this year that currently has an ERA that is below a 4.25. That'd be Hogan Harris. Old Hogan Hero has been able to do a really solid job in this bullpen. And I mean, these guys like JT Ginn and Juice, you've had someone like a Tyler Ferguson. You've got a lot of mix and match guys. That's Waldo Beto, who used to be a starter, who's now a bullpen piece. They just have not been able to get the job done. Like, nobody outside of our friend Mr. Hogan Hero has been able to do anything whatsoever. And then for the Athletics, this is a lineup that, it's solid. Like, I'm not going to sit here and say that they're lighting the world on fire or anything like that, but Tyler Soderstrom, Brent Rooker, a combined 30 home runs. Lawrence Butler is moving the line with a double-figure amount of bombs. Jacob Wilson continues hitting north of 340, and he continues to not draw a lot of walks, but you know what? He's moved the line. The wrong Max Muncy has not been great. Like, Max Muncy on the Dodgers has been. The Athletics Max Muncy, not so much. But you do have someone like Nick Kurtz, 11 home runs at about 155 at-bats. So you've got some relatively good production there. And for the Yankees, it really is a case where when Aaron Judge goes cold, this entire offense does go cold. But I think that he's going to be able to find it. 28 home runs, north of 460 on base. And even when Aaron Judge goes cold, he's able to draw those intentional walks. He's able to find a way to be able to get on base. I do think that he's gotten through the worst of it. And then additionally, Cody Bellinger, he's been able to do an okay job of being able to find a way to be able to reach base, and he's been able to give you some okay pop. You've got Trent Grisham, who's been able to supply nearly a 350 on base, and he's been able to give you about 14 to 15 home runs as well. And you've been able to get back Miguel Andujar now as well, because they've been dealing with a lot of injuries with regards to this lineup. And I mean, for Andujar, he was looking like he should be able to get back into things, but he might be a little bit banged up once again. It's Gio Urshela is actually going to be coming back for the team, so that helps out a little bit. But that said, with the Athletics, just can't trust in this bullpen whatsoever. And I do think that with regards to this game, you're going to be able to find the New York Yankees to do a solid job, be able to find a way to be able to get the job done. And I think that the A's do their part with regards to this total as well. So this is a total that we're finding at an 8.5. I do like the over for the Yankees. Pretty much a minus 110 or better. I'm looking at that run line right now. We're finding that in the neighborhood about minus 102, minus 105. So I'm going to be willing to dive in on that run line as well. And here's something that I really want to dive in on, some football. As here at VSiN, we've got our early bird special for the upcoming NFL season. $175, that gets you covered for the entirety of the football season. And that's not just football, that's everything that we do here at the network. That's all of our daily best bet emails from our VSiN show hosts and guests, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, live and on-demand shows via the VSiN Watch app, full access to VSiN.com's analytics, tools, and pro systems, and you're going to get the new NFL betting guide that is going to be coming out on Tuesday, July 1st. I tell you right now, I've got my projections in terms of both leagues' playoffs, both NFC and AFC, and early access means that you've got a better shot at spotting all the futures market value before the lines move. Now's the perfect time to join us with this football special of $175 all the way through the Super Bowl. That's every sport that we cover. VSiN.com/subscribe is how you get in on this special, as it is cashing out with myself, Greg Peterson, right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. And we were just touching upon one AL East team in the New York Yankees. How about if we touch upon another one? Actually, another two, because this is a in-division rivalry between the Blue Jays and the Boston Red Sox. 917, 918 on the card. One Jose Barrios is on the bump for the Jays. I know that our good friends Dave Ross along Jensen Lewis, they do a good job with the trill. I did my best there. Meanwhile, Brian Bayo is on the bump for the Boston Red Sox. And Mr. Bayo is right now finding himself as a very slim underdog, like even money minus 105, and in that neighborhood about minus 110 to minus 120 is that number on Toronto. 8.5 is the total. And for Jose Barrios, I have always taken a look at his home and road splits because they are oh so fascinating. And this dates all the way back to when he was a rookie with the Toronto Blue Jays. That is over a decade ago. And for Mr. Barrios, he throughout his career, 353 home ERA, giving up less than one home run per nine innings, nine punchouts per nine innings. On the road, this goes down to 8 punchouts per 9 innings, just under 1.5 home runs allowed per 9 innings, 4.56 ERA. Very big home and road splits. Now, the good news is this is a Blue Jays bullpen that has been in the top half of the big leagues in terms of ERA. You've got some relatively good long guys like a Yuriel Rodriguez is able to give you a sub-3 ERA. We've seen Mason Fluharty and Chad Green go straight down the toilet bowl, but you know what? You've been able to get some good innings out of these guys like a Braden Fisher, Brandon Little. They've been pretty solid. And then for the Boston Red Sox, this is actually a top 10 team in terms of their bullpen ERA. Brandon Bernardino along Justin Wilson have been solid in that bullpen. Aroldis Chapman continues to be an ageless wonder. Do recognize that you had Garrett Woodlock have a little bit of a rough week, but overall, I do like this bullpen. And for the Boston Red Sox, you're without Rafael Devers right now. Obviously, that's a little bit of an issue. They had to send Christian Campbell down to the minor league level, but you still have Wilder Abreu whiling out. He's been able to give you 13 plus home runs, and you've got quite a few guys that find a way to be able to get on base. Like a lot of these platoon guys, Rob Revsender has been able to hit north of 275 for this team. You've been able to get Rami Gonzalez to be able to find a way to move the line. And then the catcher in Carlos Cervantes has actually been very good for them. And don't call his name on the flip side, Alejandro Kirk. He's been really good for the Blue Jays. He's been well north of 300 thus far this season, so I've been highly impressed there. Now, here's the thing with the Toronto Blue Jays that have been costly, and it's a big reason why they're only averaging about 3.7 runs per game when they are on the road. In terms of their road numbers, bottom seven team in the big leagues in terms of runs per game, it's just that they're not hitting the deep ball. They are averaging a home run every 1.9% of their at-bats away from home. The only team hitting a home run less frequently per at-bat on the road than the Toronto Blue Jays, the Chicago White Sox. And you've got a trio of guys, George Springer, along with Vlad Guerrero Jr., Bo Bichette, who have all been able to give you 11 home runs. So, been able to get a little bit of production there. And again, all three of those guys are giving you either a really good on base or a really good batting average. In the case of Vlad Guerrero Jr., north of 380 on base, a little bit of both. Nathaniel Lux has been able to do a nice job of being able to find a way on base as well. But I do think the Brian Bello, a big time sinker ball pitcher who probably doing for a little bit of regression. 330 ERA, but he's giving you about 7 strikeouts and 4 walks per 9 innings. Has been a little bit less than tremendous there. I do think that he's going to be able to go out there. He's going to be able to hold down the fort, and I do think that he keeps the ball in the yard. So this is a total that I do like to the over, because I do think that for the Red Sox, they do a solid job here getting to the Toronto Blue Jays and Murillo. So I like the over, and I do like the Red Sox on the money line. And coming up next, how about if we recap the NBA draft right here on Cashing Out on Visa, the Sports Betting Network.